But first to an epic tale of Australian business that'll surely be studied for years to come, but not for the right reasons. In 2015, when Japan Post acquired the Australian logistics company Toll Group for $6.5 billion, it looked to be the start of a global success story. 5 years later, the company's up for sale, its debts and losses sky high. And as an investigation by the Financial Review's Aaron Patrick reveals, Toll's problems are myriad and include a messy internal structure, businesses which operate as personal fiefdoms, and links to organised crime. Former employees have said that eye-opening stories of bikie gangs operating drug courier services and business scams just scratch the surface of what went on inside Toll. As for Japan Post, they look set to lose billions on a company that was to give Japan a foothold in the growing business of delivery and supply. And that's before we get to know how this affects the reputation of corporate Australia. Aaron Patrick is a senior correspondent for the Financial Review. I spoke to him late yesterday.
Good afternoon, Geraldine.
This is quite a story. Could you briefly outline first what made the Toll Group such an attractive target for Japan Post back in 2015?
Well, look, Japan Post was a really sleepy, huge Japanese company owned by the Japanese government, and it wanted to list on the share market. In fact, Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe told it to list on the share market. So what it needed was a growth vehicle, and it looked around the region and it settled on Toll because it thought Toll could be its vehicle for taking on the global market for moving stuff around. And it didn't have any way to grow on its own, and so Toll was going to be its growth vehicle because it needed to convince investors in Japan that it was growing and not shrinking.
And how well was Toll doing when Japan Post bought it?
Toll was on a tear. Toll had been built up by a gentleman called Paul Little, who became chairman of the Essendon Football Club, billionaire, philanthropist. And they had made about 120 acquisitions, and it had become the 39th biggest company in Australia. And also one of the fastest growing, and it was genuinely quite a big company, 45,000 employees, operations around the world, with a really good reputation and quite strong growth, which isn't that easy to find these days.
But in fact, your series shows that it was on the verge of a terrible decline.
Events have shown that Toll Holdings was nowhere near as valuable as the Japanese paid for it. They paid $6.5 billion. And then just within 2 years, they wrote off almost all of that money. So in that sense, Toll was grossly overvalued when it was sold to the government. And what we tried to do is work out why.
Dare I say, it was, you know, the famous Kerry Packer said you get Alan Bond in your lifetime. It was Toll's Alan Bond came into the rescue just when they were actually about to declare a very difficult future.
The Japanese government was Alan Bond in this case. And the Japanese government, I think, just assumed, because it's an Australian company, listed on the share market, very experienced management team, they assumed, well, this has got to be a decent business. And were they in for a shock? They could not believe how this company was wrong and what was going on inside it.
Look, maybe we should just flesh it out a little bit more, because I think a lot of us would recognise Toll by its teal-coloured trucks and its logo, but not have any real idea of what it does. Is it sort of Linfox, another Linfox? You know, what kinds of businesses is it involved in?
Toll is a really big business, and I think a lot of people know it because it's a company which delivers parcels door-to-door and overnight, but it's a much bigger and more complex company than that. Toll is a company that gets food to our tables. Toll is one of the biggest deliverers of goods for supermarkets, department stores, big companies. It moves clothing, it moves industrial machinery, it moves minerals. It operates its own fleet of ships. It's got its own aeroplanes and helicopters. It helps militaries around the world get equipment where they need it. It's helped the United Nations. It really is quite a big, complex company. And it's part of what we call the global supply chain. So Toll is one of those businesses which helps the global economy function because it moves stuff all around the world, moves stuff down the street, but also across continents and across oceans.
And you say part of the problem lay with the way the company had grown to this extraordinary logistic giant and the way it was run in what you describe, Aaron, as an unruly and unconventional fashion. What are you getting at there?
Well, as I started looking at the company, Geraldine, I couldn't believe what I was hearing. The internal culture and practices were just incredible. So, for instance, they had a division called IPEC, and criminal gangs had infiltrated it. And at one stage, deliveries had been subcontracted to a bikie gang, and they were using IPEC trucks to move drugs interstate, across state lines. Toll found out about this because they hired some private investigators in a firm called Cordamenta. They cancelled the contract. And then a little while later, one day, the executives are watching the evening news and there's a report that 23 of their trailers, these are the things carried behind trucks, had caught fire in a paddock north of Adelaide and were burning out of control. And that was the first they'd heard of it. Look, there are other stories where, for instance, there was a gentleman who ran a distribution centre, a warehouse. He was on about $70,000 to $80,000 a year. They found out that one of their contractors was his brother, though his brother had a different surname. And his brother was charging more than you would expect for these kind of services. Anyway, they investigated this bloke. The bloke quit, moved back to Europe, but put his house up for sale. And they looked at the listing online and they found it was this three-story beach house selling for about $6 million.
Right. I mean, yeah, the stories go on. But also there were other, you write that it paid wages through 49 different payroll systems. There was no central structure. Each seems to have had its own way of doing business in each country, including very lax standards of safety. And like, it's hard to equate this with Paul Little, who I always thought of as one of the venerable businessmen of Australia. Did he just lose control, did he?
Well, Paul Little is one of Australia's great businessmen, very prominent figure and a great philanthropist. And to be fair on him, he stepped down in 2012, and my articles focus on what happened in the company after him. But there was one particularly serious, I think, incident that it's worth noting, which is they moved into the Middle East and they bought some businesses there, which essentially delivered service supermarkets and department stores around the Gulf. But there was a scam going on. Some toll employees were not declaring the right amount of customs duty to the government, but they were charging the customers the right amount. So there was a difference, and they were taking that money for themselves. An accountant in the office found out what was going on and alerted Toll the company. Toll had to go and then pay several million dollars to the government to make up the difference. In the meantime, someone at Toll went to the government and said, "This account whistleblower is a crook. He is stealing from us." The whistleblower was locked up in jail for at least 2 months, maybe longer, while very senior people at Toll, very top of the company, had to desperately scramble to get their own guy out of prison who'd been wrongly accused.
Goodness. Now, Aaron, you spoke to several people from within Toll. How much was known about these sorts of problems within the company?
Well, Geraldine, I spoke to former employees, and these people are on the salary payroll, and they all had an amazing story. And you know what? They were all scarred by the experience. And one person who was a national sales manager, she said, "Look, I had some great times there and I had some terrible times there. And I loved these guys, but they were basically a bunch of truckies in suits." And what I heard was a culture where the rules didn't really matter. Many people had a side hustle going on. There was one story I heard where Toll had this bizarre agreement where if any electronic goods belonging to Sharp were damaged, not the goods, but the packaging. If the packaging was damaged, Toll agreed to take ownership and recompense Sharp. So you had this thing where you'd have a Sharp fridge going through the warehouse, someone would nick the packaging, Toll would then have to buy it from Sharp. In theory, it would be sold at auction, okay, and the money recouped. In reality, it just disappeared. And when a manager actually tried to track down the auction house to find out what had happened to all the Sharp equipment. At one point, they owned $1.5 million in Sharp electronic goods. They found the auctioneer sold agricultural goods, and it didn't have any televisions or Sharp fridges there.
Wow. So, I mean, what was Toll's relationship with its Japanese parent company?
The Japanese really tried to do the right thing. So when they came in, they said to everyone, don't leave. We want to keep the existing leaders. We want to keep the existing board. And in fact, if you've got options, we're going to pay them out. So we're going to pay you to stay. So you had some people, many people would have left, but the Japanese believed in investing in the people as well as the company. And I reckon it took them clearly 2 years to work out what they bought and how dysfunctional it was. And people have told me that the Japanese were kept in the dark. The Japanese were very polite. They were very respectful of the Toll culture. And initially they thought it was a great company. And they thought they would learn from Toll. And they thought they could take Toll's work in IT and spread that across the whole group. And they struggled for years. And they had to keep injecting more money into it to keep it going. So, look, the Japanese is a very closed corporate culture. And they won't talk to me. I've reached out to them multiple times. But I imagine they feel very deceived.
Well, that's. I wonder whether there is any reputational damage to Australia. I mean, you do discuss this a bit in your articles because listeners might say, well, no, you know, Australia can't be blamed. But, I mean, really, it looked like it was, a golden example of our innovation and our entrepreneurship, and it certainly was not.
This is a really bad look for Australian business, Geraldine. This was a really great Australian company. This was one of the bigger acquisitions of an Australian company by a foreign business ever. And I'd say it's probably the most embarrassing. And this does not do well for Australia's corporate reputation across Asia. And Australia is a company that lives on foreign investment. Foreign investment is what made our economy. And we do have quite a good reputation for being honest, but sometimes reputation belies the reality.
What's happening now? Is it up for sale, I presume, is it? Is it a company with a future?
It is up for sale. But we have heard through our banking sources that it is up for sale, or at least part of it's up for sale. I guess it'll depend on how much they get. The numbers look really bad because Toll's got about $6 billion in debt, and people I've spoken to say it's worth nowhere near as much as that. So it could well be that the Japanese have to write off even more of their investment.
What about the employees? What about these 45,000 employees?
There's 40,000 of them left now because a lot of them got fired. Company could well be broken up and they could be, scattered to different businesses. I don't know what's going to happen to the staff. And I've had a lot of staff reading my articles. Like, it's not often you get forklift drivers reading the Fin Review. In talking about this, I've had a lot of them reach out to me and just say, thank you for telling me what's going on. Because on the shop floor, we're all talking about it. And we're just so pleased that the story's being told and it's out there publicly.
Well, Aaron, terrific that you are being read so widely. Thank you for your time today.
You're very welcome, Geraldine. Great to chat.
And Aaron Patrick is a senior correspondent at the Australian Financial Review, and that story is clearly one to watch.